Dan.
Oh. So you remember my name now, do you? Well, do you also remember what you swore to do with every breath in your body?
Welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities between Marvel Comics and their MCU counterparts. And we are your hosts, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
It's the end of spoopy season, Jeff. Are
We're
you happy?
There. I mean.
You're not really a spoopy person, right?
I don't usually celebrate it. I don't really usually dress up.
Yeah.
Just because I'm lazy.
But you don't do any of the other stuff like I do.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think I do.
What's your favorite holiday? Do you have a favorite holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah?
So it's probably Christmas.
Yeah. You're a Christmas boy.
It's like very Filipino of me.
I feel it. Have you done the stuff in the Philippines? Like the full...
We were in the Philippines for Christmas one year in 2015.
Yeah.
And it is...
Intense. Yeah. It's very intense. The whole... Christ coming down from the mountain with the crucifix.
It starts in September. Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty intense.
All right. Well, we're almost there considering this episode is dropping November 1st.
Weather doesn't feel like it though.
No, it does not. Especially in California. I was so excited because I was like, oh, it's getting cooler. And then my friend was like, you know, it's like 90 next week. I was like, what?
It's so bad.
It's really, really bad. You can literally feel the temperature rise 10 degrees out of nowhere.
It was so hot today. Ugh. I was like, ugh, I'm pissed.
It's brutal. I know. It's too fast and all these things are melting away and things are getting warmer and it's just, I want a cozy fall, but guess we're going to just have to fly by the seat of our pants with that one.
I was like, man, I got to bring my fan in again. Like, come on.
You can still wear shorts all the way through Thanksgiving, I'm sure.
I don't want to, but I guess we have to.
I know, right? Oh, gosh. But there are some other festivities going on around the world. And one of them was earlier this week where Wakanda took to the runway for Vogue World 2025.
Yeah, that was crazy to see.
I was tripping out because I was like, wait. What is this? And then Danai Gurira and Her Highness herself, Angela Bassett, were both in it. And I was like, what is this?
I know.
And you know what? I watched that entire thing. I sent it to Jeff. I'm sure you probably already saw it.
I know. Yeah, I saw it.
And I was like, Wakanda just hits different.
I know.
Everything about Wakanda hits different. So I really need to jump in and watch Eyes of Wakanda because I still haven't done it.
Yeah.
But man, that was like really cool. I'm not even remotely familiar with Vogue World. This is the first time I've heard of it.
Telling me.
But it's apparently a fashion show celebrating cinema in Hollywood. So that was pretty sick to see that kind of celebratory thing. Yeah, that was really cool.
Tiana Taylor, too, was also the Dora Milaje. That was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, and then there's one other person that was like a big knit. I can't remember her name. But it was just so cool. It was so cool to watch. And it was only, 2.5 minutes? But I was like, damn, this is a good 2.5 minutes. This is like entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just awesome. So very curious if I actually want to know a little bit more about that and why Wakanda was chosen of all. I mean, it's obvious to me why they were chosen. But if this becomes like a regular thing for Marvel Studios, I'll be very interested to see what they cook up next year. But very cool stuff. More cool stuff. Marvel Zombies recently took over Marvel Rivals. And they even introduced, I think today, new suits for Iron Man and Spider-Man are coming out. And because the new season is about to drop, I guess, season 4. But I was playing just as Jeff got here, and the zombie stuff is something else.
I know. I was watching Die play Melee. It, and I was like, oh, this is like almost like Call of Duty zombies in a way. but just kind of like very like mindless.
Yeah, you know, it's mindless.
Gaming, which is totally fun.
Yeah, and it was pretty fun. It's fun until you get to the final round, which is what I'm on, and your toe so much as dips into a vat of acid and you're dead. Like, you just instantly die, and the hordes that you saw on that play, imagine that times like 10 or 20.
Oh my gosh.
It's insane, but it's insane fun. Just not when you're losing that often, because they reset you after a while. So if you die X amount of times, your team, mm-hmm. you're done. Like they kick you okay. out, you're done. So yeah, if you haven't played that yet, definitely give it a shot if you're on Rivals. But looking forward to the other reveals that they have for season 4. And last but not least, and it's funny enough because Jeff brought this up to me before we started recording. And I said, I wrote this on my notes and there's nothing. There's nothing in the ether as far as announcements. No yeah. expansion from any of the news at New York Comic Con.
Fantastic Four on Disney Plus soon.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah. That's it.
But that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing that like stuck out to me.
Yeah. So that I think that means that they're dropping the Wonder Man bomb any week now.
Probably November.
Yeah. To fully prep for the series drop. And then truly the week that that show comes out, that's when Daredevil's going to start.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So they're going to, the marketing queue is lining up, but it is very interesting. They just straight up silence from all angles.
That is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Me. And it's just their kind of like external entertainment. It's like, yeah, we've got some stuff in the games and, you know, the reminder, this is streaming, but that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything else, except for those pictures of Sadie Sink on set.
I know.
I did see that.
I do remember seeing that.
I'm still kind of like, I don't know.
You don't know who she could be?
No. I mean, I feel like the alternate universe children are tricky. So if she's Mayday, I don't know.
Some people are saying that she was the Punisher's, the girl Punisher name. I forgot her name.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, just because of her outfit that she was wearing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
She's wearing camo and boots
kind of like just combat boots and
interesting.
Stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't. I just.
That'd be a nice curveball.
Yeah, I mean, it would make more sense as to why he's in the film. But we don't know yet. We'll see, I guess. Because there's nothing coming out of the camp. So all that said, let's dive into this episode's character study. But first, just a reminder, we are not experts. We don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we're nerding out about Benjamin Grimm. The Thing.
Here's the thing.
I still hate how many times I fell for it. I kept seeing it on social and I'd be like, waiting.
Yeah.
And then I'm like,
yeah. So here's the thing.
That's so funny.
Oh, man.
And so for related episodes, tune on back a couple of episodes. Speaking of, 114, Mini Marvel number 19, all about Fantastic Four, First Steps. 115, Invisible Woman. 116, Human Torch. Because we're covering all these guys one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're almost there. So As we've said in the previous episodes, there's going to be a lot of repetition for this one, but we're going to uncover a little more each time. And Ben himself was created once again by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And the first appearance, if you hadn't remembered or you kind of forgot, it's the Fantastic Four against Giganto. And again, it served as Marvel's first superhero book. So it was really a pivotal moment for the publisher in that It was the first for everything. So they're really embracing the F of Fantastic Four in that they're fantastic. They were first and they're family. And so, yeah, Ben's first appearance obviously is with the rest of the team in this issue in November 1961, titled The Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four. And Jeff has already guessed the cover price. This is a facsimile edition for the record. So this is a reprint. And it went from that cool 10 cents, I believe, to $3.99.
That's a jump.
In modern age.
Jump.
Yeah. Oof. Inflation, baby.
I know.
And so there's no way to just acquire the book. You have to go through auction houses or a reliable source of some sort, like a store. We previously reported that a copy of Fantastic Four number one graded at near mint, CGC 9.2, sold for $1.5 million in 2022. And that was the most recent. But I do have an update. And I discovered that a 9.6 copy was sold in September of 2024 for a whopping $2,400,000. $40,000.
Okay, yeah, that's crazy.
Making it the highest sold copy to date, with 3,000 CGC graded copies on record. Yeah, there's 3,000 of these babies out there. 9.6 is probably hard to come by. It's probably like less than 10 of them in existence.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, so as of last year, only 8 comics have made it past the $2 million sales mark. So in addition to Fantastic Four number one, this includes Action Comics number one, mm-hmm. which is the first appearance of Superman, Superman number one, Captain America Comics number one, Marvel Comics number one, Batman number one, Tales of Suspense number 39, which is the first appearance of Iron Man, and last but not least, Amazing Fantasy number 15, featuring Spoidermane. You think about it, it's like, oh, okay, these are like the top level superheroes: Superman, Batman, Iron Man, Captain America, Spider-Man, and Fantastic Four. So, first exposure to this character.
It has to, yeah.
All the same.
Oh yeah, Michael, yeah. Michael Chiklis.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oldie but goodie for sure.
Yeah.
Same for, I mean, mine is the same that I previously mentioned, that it's just kind of like they've always been there. They've always been in the ether and together collectively. So it's like, okay, whenever Sue, Johnny, and Reed came into consciousness, that, you know, Ben was right there with them. So hard to pinpoint, but definitely when it was a wee lass. As far as the mini book goes, we have a bio for Ben. And for your enjoyment, Jeff, 7'5". He's a big boy.
I feel like it'd be bigger.
He's taller than Mephisto, which is interesting if you think about that.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, very, very tall. They don't depict him as tall, is that though?
For sure they don't.
Yeah,
no.
First steps, he's definitely like a 6'5", maybe. And then a whopping 1,650 pounds.
My God.
So he's big.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's rock solid, that's for sure. So his bio reads, alongside Reed Richards, Sue Storm, and Sue's brother Johnny, pilot Ben Grimm flew Reed's experimental spaceship into the rays of a cosmic storm that imbued each with unique powers. Ben's change, however, was also superficial as he mutated into a rocky-skinned, clobberin' thing. Yeah. Straight to the point with that one. A lot of this will sound very familiar, but yeah, we're going to uncover a lot about Ben. And I will say, you know, because I mentioned up top when we started doing these episodes, I wasn't huge on Fantastic Four. I've never been huge on Fantastic Four outside of these live action films.
Uh-huh.
And so going back and reading all of these issues outside of like the Ultimates verse and all that, like just the classic issues, I think Ben is the most interesting one out of them.
Really?
So yeah, I mean, I haven't dipped into Reed as much as I'd like to yet.
Yeah.
I will very, very soon. But even the exposure I've gotten, you know, to Reed through these other three characters.
Yeah.
Ben's the most interesting. He's very, very interesting to me. So we'll get down to it. But
I know, and surprisingly, we haven't seen like much of him. Probably Rise of the Silver Surfer is probably when we've seen the most out of him.
I was thinking that too. Yeah. I was like, you know, cinematically, they haven't really dove into a big picture concept about him. But yeah, we'll get to that shortly. But quick recap for the origin story is that Ben is friends with Reed Richards, who is a super genius who created this rocket, wanted to go to space. Ben said, you don't know. Do I got to do voice? You don't know enough about cosmic rays to go up to space safely. But all it took was Sue Storm to call him a coward to ignite that spark that is clearly innate in Ben Grimm for some reason.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, you know what? We're going to go. So they go to space and they do it illegally. And once they breach the atmosphere, they're exposed to these cosmic rays, they come back to Earth, and they're all changed forever. It is very interesting because they've retold this story a couple of times in continuity. And so they revisit it, obviously, because some audiences don't read from the number one.
Yeah.
Some audiences are going to read from a book in 1993.
Yeah.
So they've at least told the story twice over. And it is interesting because in one of the issues I read, they retell the story, but it's very interesting because Ben is so coarse and callous in the original,
mm-hmm.
but in the retelling, they're all nicer to each other. So they soften the blow a bit, which is really interesting to me. I'm not sure why, but in the original, I really distinctly remember even the body language was different in that Reed was the one sitting down, he was smoking a pipe, mm-hmm. and Ben was the one standing up and leaning against a table, very tense, and he was like, I don't agree with this. And then and now, in the retelling, Ben is very calm. Sorry, Reed. My days of being a hero behind me. Like, you know, it's so different.
Yeah.
But I guess they're just trying to even out the structure of his characterization, which is very interesting. But we will talk a lot more about Ben as we go along here. And so I wanted to add that there is a fun fact about the ship. So the ship was called Marvel One in 616 continuity. Mm-hmm. It's still unnamed in Thunderbolts, but the one in the comics,
yeah.
much like other relics and weapons and all that paraphernalia from the superheroes, the remnants of the Marvel One ship were eventually donated to the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. So imagine like in the end of Captain America, for instance,
yeah.
where Steve is going to the museum.
Yes.
And there's parts of the Fantastic Four ship as well as all the rest of his stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a lot like that. So everything goes to the Smithsonian.
I went when I was younger.
And oh, really?
I remember being like,
I've never
like, oh,
been.
My gosh.
Oh, that's so cool. So as for Ben himself, he was a high school football star named Grim Reaper.
Nice.
I know. I was like, that's so good. So that alone tells you a lot about the character that we're dealing with. And in fact, he was so good, he received a college scholarship to play for State University in Hedgman, New York. As an adult, he enlisted with the U.S. Air Force and became a seasoned test pilot, which really aligned his journey alongside Reed along the way. And we'll get into that because I discovered some stuff about Reed that I was like, oh,
really?
No, yeah, totally not privy to. And so, again, we'll chip away at his roots a little more as we go along here. But until then, Benjamin J. Grimm, the Thing, portrayed by Michael Bailey Smith in the unreleased film, then Michael Chiklis in the Fox films, Jamie Bell in 2015's Fanforstic, and most recently, Eben Moss Bachrach in First Steps. Do you have a favorite Ben?
I don't know. Yeah, now this one, it's like hard because, you know, Michael Chiklis, he did so well.
He did so great, especially for what he was dealing with.
And he did it like physically,
yes.
you know, in
yeah.
that costume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But not to discredit, because Eben Moss Bachrach also still there.
Yeah.
CGI'd over, but
yeah.
the eyes are very telling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Like a totally, obviously, it's like a totally different rendition.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I love Eben Moss Backrack.
Yeah.
Like that's
he's
cousin
fantastic.
Right there, you know?
I am cousin.
You know?
I love so, cousin. Yeah.
Yeah, and he kills it. Like yeah. he did bring such an emotional kind of like element
yeah.
to Ben, like even in the facial. Mm-hmm. In the facial like kind of acting of it. Obviously mm-hmm. credits to like the VFX and everything too, but
sure.
yeah. I think I'd like.
I know they're like really toe to toe to me.
Yeah,
like,
it's really up
it's
there.
It's tough, yeah. Which is I think astonishing to say, right? Because again, I think I mentioned this in the Johnny episode. I don't know, but the reception of Michael Chiklis's look initially wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. People were very critical of it, which was like. To me, I thought that was ridiculous because I was like, no, you have to understand that man is walking around in a full, like, essentially
yeah.
what is a puppeteering costume.
Yeah.
And, you know, and his makeup is so intense that you can't even tell where it ends and he begins. He's so transformed by it. And so much credit given to Michael. And I think he did leave such an impression on so many people as Ben, because even his voice was fantastic. And
yes.
and the way that he, again, like you said,
yes.
his expressions are there and his emotion was there. And maybe his stature wasn't as large as people would want, but he still brought such a performance that you can't discredit him whatsoever. And mm-hmm. it is very, very comparable to the level that which, you know, Ebbins is. And I really love his in particular because, yeah, I do love Cousin as well. But I think they all did fantastic jobs, no pun intended. But the two of them are certainly the most outstanding. And I think Eben, he wins me over because of the look.
Yeah, okay.
Not that either of them have control over that, but...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. like his combination of him as an actor with like how this one looks.
Right.
It just like works. Maybe it's also like the collection of the cast kind of plays a factor into it.
For sure. And it is interesting because they both have these amazing strengths of conveying emotion despite what's going on.
Yeah.
On top of their faces.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're both incredible. And so I think when it comes to live action, at least from what we've seen, Ben seems to be the most consistent character of the four. Mm-hmm. Like, all the points are there. He's gruff. He's kind of moody. He's got a short temper. But he's also got he's softy, heart of gold, willing to right all wrongs.
Yes.
And yeah, the rest of them, they kind of waver within the hit points.
Yeah.
But they're not all the same. Whereas with Ben, it doesn't even matter, Michael or Eben.
Yeah.
They're the same character. They're just played in different phases.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah. And so there's not much to say as far as that is concerned, but I did want to hit you with a pop quiz before we move forward.
Oh my gosh.
Oh God. This was a last minute one. Cause I was going to work the Grim Reaper one into a quiz. And I was like, this is too easy. It's so obvious. Cause Grim Reaper is such a dope name.
Is.
I was like, there's no way he's not going to get this. And I couldn't think of anything to really fix it with. So, so I sided with this one. So the Marvel universe is full of characters that bear the same name. Ben.
Okay.
Can you name three of the four Big Bens aside Benjamin Grimm?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Can I?
And there's at least four.
I don't know. Wow. Can I? That is a great question.
Yeah.
Ben Grimm.
So Ben Grimm.
Ben. Oh my God.
I know. I had the same because I tested myself and I was like,
I don't know.
I thought of two and then.
But then, then I'm going to like, I'm going to hear a name. I'm going to be like, oh yeah.
Ben, Benjamin, Ben.
Ben, Benjamin, Benjamin Button. wow. Benjamin. Whoa.
Would you like a hint?
I'll take a hint.
Spider-Man.
Oh my God. Of course. Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben.
Obviously.
Ben Parker.
Ben Parker.
Yep.
Wow.
And there's at least two more.
Uncle Ben, Benjamin.
But I will give you another hint.
Oh my God.
And this is all the hint you're getting. One more Spider-Man.
Yeah, like if it's okay.
And one is in Daredevil. Jeff's making crazy faces.
Ben, like now I'm trying to like overthink on like side characters in, you know, in Spider-Man. It's like
they're primaries.
I know.
Yeah. But not.
What is the Sandman's name?
Immediate.
It's not Ben, right?
No, it is not Ben.
That's what I thought.
Gosh.
No, it's not Ben. No. But no, that's not. Oh my God. This is actually really hard.
Flint Marko.
Flint Marko.
Yeah. this is a tough one.
Go ahead. Because I'm just going to be.
So the other Spider-Man adjacent one is that a little off course. I wasn't 100% sure if you'd get it, but I was like, oh, he's pretty down with Spidey. Benjamin Reilly, who is the Scarlet Spider.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so you need to remember Benjamin is after Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Reilly is Aunt May's maiden name.
Got it.
Easy way to remember that. Then the last one, Benjamin Poindexter.
That's what it was.
AKA
I literally was Bullseye.
Bullseye.
And I was like, oh, it's Bullseye. But I was like, I don't know his last name. What's his last name?
Oh, yeah, you should have said it. No. Because I thought it was the same thing for me. I was like, what, Benjamin? I know he's a Benjamin. And I was like, yeah.
Sorry, Benjamin Poindexter.
But they've changed it in the show, for instance, where they call him Dex. So you kind of forget.
That's right. Yeah. It just kind of gets him implanted in your.
Yeah. And you're like, wait. Yeah, not so shabby, though. But that was a challenging one.
That
I will admit.
That is pretty tough.
Yeah. So as far as aesthetic goes, just a kind reminder, Fantastic Four, First Steps costume designer was Alexandra Byrne, who also worked on Thor, The Avengers, and Guardians of the Galaxy. So that slick look is all her. As for Ben's look as the Thing, it's obviously a tricky one for live action, but safe to say that he hasn't been remotely comic book accurate until first steps, although Michael Chiklis's version was an honorable effort. Because in the unreleased Fantastic Four film, if you've seen pictures of him, he looks like you just kind of put a old Halloween costume on top of him, you know, and the eyes are like hollowed out. Michael Chiklis, however, again, very similar visually. You're like, that's the thing. But in comparison to what he looks like in the comics, again, the stature is much smaller.
Yeah.
Which is, again, you can't blame him for that at all. But he doesn't seem as rock hard, and he's more smooth and such, but still just off center. And in Fanforstic, oh my goodness, he looks like a burnt, like, roll of bread.
Yeah. Kinda. Just right? Straight rock.
Just straight rock.
Naked rock.
Naked.
Yeah.
No less. No pants, no shorts.
Yeah.
And then you arrive at Eben Moss Backrocks and the CGI that went into his, and it's like, ah.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing for sure.
Literally. And he's very, very, very heavily based off of the legendary work of Alex Ross. And so if you're familiar with Alex Ross, then you see that portrait or that visual of Ben Grimm, and you're like, oh yeah, they pulled that from Alex Ross's work, which is, you know, obviously a hop, skip, and a jump away from the classic artists as well.
Yeah.
And so absolutely love that. And so ILM actually provided the FX for Thing in First Steps.
Yep.
Which is really cool.
They're so good, yeah.
They're so good. And they're just like, gosh, they're always hiding little corners, just peppering their work into other people's
stuff. Pretty much.
It's so great. And that allows us to move on to powers and paraphernalia. And so, straight up, he is a rock. Therefore, he is both strong and durable. So much so that Ben's strength is logged at a level 8 on the power grid of Marvel heroes, presumably of 10. So if you're thinking Galactus is like a 10, he's an 8, which is like, oh,
wow,
comparable. Sure. I mean, cosmic versus humanoid, but still. And so he's actually registered as one of the strongest men on Earth either way. And so part of his power includes his organic orange rock exterior that insulates him from harm. So that's why he's like as durable, obviously, because it's like, how do you can't really harm rock, especially if it's all over your body. And that physiological mutation allows superhuman strength, durability, stamina, and sensory adaptation, as well as enhanced healing with slight regeneration properties. So I don't know if they showed this in any of the live action films, but there are moments where in the comics, if he gets bombarded by something really hard or he gets punched, you just see like pebbles fall off, like chunks fall off of his exterior. And so the regeneration allows him to heal
a little bit. Okay.
That portion,
but not
like immediately, not like Logan, but he does eventually. So it's interesting that like, if you think
they showed the beard growing.
Yeah.
I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's an interesting thought where it's like, if you think of all the organisms and the follicles, for instance, to your point, if he were a human and he were not shaving, he would grow hair. Therefore, if he's a rock and he's slowly, time is passing, then I guess rocks would form.
I guess.
It's an interesting thought because there is a nuance that we'll talk about in a little bit, but yeah, regeneration properties, they're very interesting with Ben. And so as recent as 2019, Ben can now change back into his fully human form thanks to a formula created by the brilliant young minds of the Future Foundation think tank. So a bunch of kids that are brilliant got together in a powwow and were like, we can make a formula. And then Reed was like, great, print. And so they created this formula that Ben took. And every year around the same time, he has a watch that he wears and it ticks down until he transforms.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a week is it a week? I can't remember if it's a week or a day, but he has that time as a human to just be.
I wonder if it's painful to transform in and out of the thing.
I don't know. They don't really they don't really expand on that.
I know, yeah.
Which is interesting. So it's kind of like it just goes away. It just husks away. It is interesting though, because I don't think that they've touched on that, but I would imagine that it just kind of feels like he's lighter. So it just comes off. So it must be nice for him to fall back into the human form. The funny thing is, so going back to the beard part, is that the only time, at least in the comics, that Ben can truly age is when he is in human form. So when he is the thing and he is made of rock, he is not aging. So he is technically immortal because it just doesn't, yeah, time doesn't pass for him. And so his innards are not slowly dying like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So yeah, so the only time he ages is that one time a year. And so technically, ever since that day that they got hit by the cosmic rays, he hasn't aged more than 10, 20, 30, 40 days, which is incredible. And so Ben could very well be immortal as long as he remains in his rock form and is never fatally wounded.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, what can even penetrate?
Vibranium.
I mean, sure.
Adamantium.
Sure.
Which we're going to talk about a little bit later on down the line. But in live action, it's noted as his powers are noted as artificially enhanced physiology, which is a bit different than mutation or physiological mutation. Mm. And it's rendered this stone mimicry, aka his rock exterior, so that allows him the superhuman strength, durability, and stamina. So they don't talk about regeneration and all that other immortal stuff yet. So he's just a dude that's rock and super strong.
Nice.
In first steps. Not quite as seasoned and cultivated as the comic book version yet. And again, like many, many newer characters, similar but simplified abilities, especially with this new Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So they seem to have these commonalities at the root base of their powers, very simplified versions of the comic book version. But again, we've only seen them in one film. So it's so early in their tenure, they've got a long way to go. So this is where it gets a little more dense as far as the characterization and Ben's origin goes. And it starts with family, friends, and affiliations. And so right up top, Daniel and Elsie Grimm, dad and mom, respectively. So unlike the initially charmed and entitled life of Sue and Johnny, Ben's family was poor. And they resided on Yancey Street in New York's Lower East Side. And it was pretty rough around the edges. Like even in continuity when he goes back to visit, it's just dilapidated and rats and trash everywhere, and it's just a ruckus. And
you love New York City.
Yeah, I know. And in recollection, you realize very quickly that Ben idolized his older brother, and so the story starts very much when he was a child. And so both of these boys, these grim boys, were spiteful because their dad was completely deadbeat. He was an alcoholic and abusive. To make matters worse, Ben's father, Daniel Sr., he couldn't hold a job. And so this led to Daniel Grimm Jr., Ben's older brother, defend and provide for the whole family. And so in Daniel Jr.'s mind, to do that, he had to do some not so great things. So he joined a band. Not a band. He joined.
What instrument did he play?
I said that with such gusto. Confidence is there. He joined a gang.
As one does.
As one does. And of course, this is the notorious Yancey Street Gang. And so I think they might have name dropped it in First Steps, but I'm not 100% sure. Yancey Street for sure.
He
mentions Yancey Street. And he even says, like, I grew up on Yancey Street, whatever he did. But the Yancey Street Gang themselves are notorious. And so we'll get through that eventually. But Daniel then joined and led this gang. And so one night he has a fight with the dad because the dad's being dad and he's being abusive toward the mother. But in the middle of the night, Daniel sneaks out and Ben's like, where is he going? And he decides to follow him. And it's very interesting the way that they narrate it, because it's like Ben's like, I don't think he knew that I was following him, but he sure as heck moved like he knew someone was. So he's Daniel's like really obviously like he's on edge all the time.
Yeah.
He's just got to protect himself. This all leads to this giant gang fight. Have you seen West Side Story?
I don't think I've seen it in full.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're familiar enough with the jets and the sharks, right?
Yeah.
The fight scenes.
Yes.
This is exactly the same scene. So Daniel makes it to this giant basketball court. It's filled with gang members of both sides. And he jumps into it. And they're all fighting for turf territory. You know, like whatever they're doing. And so Ben, at this point, was a mere 8 years old when his beloved brother is then killed in the fight. And he's stabbed by a rival member of the Thompson Avenue gang. This is very interesting, too, because like given the time frame, they show in panel the brother getting stabbed.
Oh, my God.
I was like, there's no blood.
But
it's like,
a knife in a body?
Yeah. Oh. And he falls over, immediately dies. And Ben even says something like, you know, like seconds ago, he was like my brother and he
it's
did all this. Yeah. And then he's like, and then in seconds, he's nothing. Just on the ground. He's nothing. And it's very interesting because you start to see like, oh, this is where the anger started building in that little boy. And so that transformative moment in Ben's life, that's the one that really planted the seed for his anger that would eventually grow in him as he grew. Because 10 years later, and he is now 18 years old, Ben himself becomes leader of the Yancey Street gang. Mm. So he hasn't even learned, oh, maybe I shouldn't do what my brother did because look what happened to him.
Yeah.
It impacted their family so badly that it led Ben to do the exact same thing, thinking, oh, I can change things. And nothing changes. So he carries on the same cycle. And then once again, as it does, tragedy strikes. And Ben's uncle rolls up to the house, his uncle Jake, and he says, hey, son, I'm sorry to say your parents have died. They don't expand on it. There's literally nothing.
Wow.
Like car accident, you don't know. You don't know if he killed the mom. Like you don't know anything. All you know is that Uncle Jake is there. There's a police car out front and that's it.
Yeah.
And so the circumstances are fully unknown. But Jake then takes Ben under his wing, adopts him into his family, which is only he and his wife. And he, despite Ben being like gruff and tough and I don't need nobody and basically hating his uncle and his aunt, he learns to love them because they nurture him. And then the uncle is a successful, I believe he was a doctor. He's a physician. So he has the money and the means to really take care of Ben the way that he never got.
Okay.
And so it changes him completely. And so, yeah, later in life, he actually built a youth center in his old town and he named it in honor of his late brother. And so, yeah, it's interesting how that turned out. So there was something that he needed that he just wasn't, you know, the original parents were just not quite. Yeah, it's definitely a rough life. And so no MCU counterparts for the family, at least not yet. But as for Jacob Jake Grimm, again, he took him under the wing and his wife, his first wife, Alice, was the one who helped raise Ben, but she passes on later in life and he remarries. I think it's interesting because I think Uncle Jake himself, he was well into his 70s and 80s and he remarried this woman who was like in her 30s and her name is Aunt Petunia. And the joke is that she has this really classic name, but she and Ben are practically the same age.
Oh, okay.
But he mentions, Eben Moss Bacharach mentions Aunt Petunia in First Steps, which is interesting because no one else has gotten a cameo yet.
Yeah.
But they mention her in the movie.
Of course.
So she's there. But yeah, you know, that's essentially who he has to thank for his upbringing eventually. And Jake also has no MCU counterpart. Which leads us to the familiars. First up, Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. And so we've talked quite a bit about them and their dynamic in our Johnny Storm episode, as well as the other two. And a lot of it is, you know, related to their intersecting love interests. But they're just as we've seen them. They're buddy cop, love-hate types that are undoubtedly family. And they make for good dynamic and good comedic humor between them.
I agree.
Yeah. In the comics and on screen, it's almost identical.
Really?
Joking. Well, like, not at all. Yeah. There's an, a panel where it is quite literally like what we saw in First Steps, where Johnny's just making fun of him, and you know, Ben's just like having a tantrum. Same thing with Michael Chiklis and Chris Evans. Yeah. Same exact thing. And of course, you know, in time they grow bit by bit, and it's wonderfully represented in the films. And, you know, when it comes to Ben's testy temper, that actually affected his relationships early on, especially with Sue and Johnny, because, like, they kind of got grandfathered into the relationship. Because he was friends with Reed, and they just came. And so he's like, who are these kids?
You know? Sure.
And so he often looked to Johnny as a dumb kid, despite knowing the capability and true feelings. And for Susie, it was the same thing. It was kind of like a slightly misogynistic of the times.
Yeah.
She's just a pretty dame. Why is she telling me what to do? Mm-hmm. But that's obviously changed in time. Whereas in live action, Johnny Storm, portrayed by Jay Underwood in the unreleased film, then Chris Evans, then Michael B. Jordan, then Joseph Quinn in First Steps. So again, same thing, same dynamic.
Yeah.
Off the page and on the page. It's kind of insane. Like, it seems like...
Yeah.
It seems so simple to accomplish, but I don't think it's that simple.
I mean, maybe in Fanforestick, it was probably the
worst. Oh, yeah, Fantastic. Yeah. When I talk about these comparisons... Fanforestick ain't part of the conversation.
Yeah, I can't. It's so excluded. I still can't believe I got myself to
I'm so watch proud it. Of you, though. Like, I thought it would never happen. But I mean, like, that's how crazy different it is. You don't feel any of that.
Yeah.
They don't even probably talk in that movie.
It's a pretty bad Fantastic Four movie.
It's so crazy. wipe it from the memory. It's like a Mandela effect.
It's crazy because at the time, 2015.
Yeah. You would think.
Like, I don't know.
It would have been better.
Because, like, what was around there? When did Apocalypse come out?
Bro, that was 2016, like right after Avengers. It was around Winter Soldier.
Fox was tripping then. They were freaking out. Like, they were freaking
they
out.
They were like, oh, we're going to lose the IP.
Yeah. Like, then, they had to have been freaking out.
Had to have been.
To scoundrel up that collection of actors.
Especially if you realize that it is, in fact, the same year that The Winter Soldier came out.
Is it?
Yeah.
Captain First Avenger 2011.
Winter Soldier.
14.
Okay. Around the corner.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much the next year.
But they're already there, and Fox was there.
Yeah.
That's insane to think about.
Well, released for Marvel in 2015. For MCU. That's not...
Wow. Let's see.
Wait, I'm horrible with this. Whoa. I'm usually good at this.
Oh, wow.
I'm usually good with this.
Wow. Holy cow. Oh, my gosh. There were two.
Three? Two?
Okay, so there were two.
Summer and beginning of year, or summer and Christmas, like Christmas time?
Avengers, Age of Ultron.
That's right. It was Age of Ultron.
May 2015.
Yeah.
And Ant-Man 2015, July.
Wow.
Wow, that's
the 2015 movies? Wow, I forgot about Age of Ultron being released that year.
Yeah.
That felt like a 2016 maybe.
But again, and to make matters worse, in order of release, it was Age of Ultron, Fanforestick, then Ant-Man. So they got decimated. Absolutely decimated in between
them. Probably just ignored.
Oh, yeah. For the most... Honestly, if you had not mentioned that and I didn't just look it up, I would not have guessed...
Those were the surrounding movies?
They were surrounded by those movies because, like, it's so removed from anything genre-wise, filmography-wise.
Yeah.
You almost don't believe it was made in 2015. But then it's like, when was it made?
Did Fox make any other movie that year?
I don't know.
For hero-wise? I don't think so.
Oh, no. I'm certain they didn't. I don't think they did. Yeah, they released The Kingsman. So, and that was Secret Service. It wasn't even the first film. Oh, okay. It was the second film.
That was
film.
Still good, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically anything but Marvel stuff. Only Marvel Studios really does a good job with Marvel IP. Everybody else kind of just drops the ball on it. But yeah, it's incredible that the movie was around that. And if you compare
that's crazy.
It to Ultron, let alone Ant-Man, which is pretty flawless, is insane to me. So yeah, I just, that all said, the dynamic of Johnny and Ben in the other films is fantastic. And it's Van Forsyk that just like, yeah, I'm curious if they ever talked in that movie. Now that you mention it, I don't think they did. I don't think they ever spoke a word to each other. Well, maybe one.
A couple, yeah, but it like, but
it was mean.
Yeah, or just it wasn't like a thing.
Yeah. that's so disappointing. But thankfully we have Joseph Quinn and Eben Moss back rock to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
As for Ben and Sue Storm, a.k.a. the Invisible Woman. Just like we mentioned in our Sue episode, early on, there was always sort of this consistent static through line of rigidness Ben had for Sue and Johnny. For Sue, things seemed to smooth over out a bit after year one. Johnny, he was still kind of like mean to.
Okay.
Just because, again, he was literally like 15 years old. So it was a bit different. Sue was a little older, obviously. But... you know, it's interesting because the dynamic in one issue, Ben even questions Sue's motives for being kind to him. That's how angry he was all the time, is that they got into the habit of calling each other. Superheroes do this all the time in issues where they're like, Hawkeye, what are you having for breakfast? And he's like, I don't know, Cap, I was thinking about scrambled eggs. You know, and it's like, why are you calling each other Cap and Hawkeye? And
so, It sounds weird.
And so they got into the habit of calling each other their code names, to which this means Sue would walk into the room and be like, Thing. And he hated it. And
that's
so, and it made it was kind of an insult to injury because it then made calling him his real name
like
questionable. Like he was literally like, you only call me Ben when you want something. Because at one point they're like, Ben. And he's like, what do you want?
Yeah.
Because he's conditioned at this point. And so it says a lot about their early relationship. And again, by the time you get to the more modern ages and then they're calling each other Ben and Susie, it's like, oh my gosh, these are different people now. You know, they've grown. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad they've moved past it. They still do it in comics, though. Trust me, they still do it.
That sounds so weird.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah. if I heard that in live action, I'd be like, okay, what are we, what are we
thankfully
doing?
Thankfully, they don't do that.
They don't.
Yeah, which is very interesting. You know, they say Nat, they say all these different names, but yeah, in the comics, they definitely, they stuck to it. And the more you go about it, the more you realize Ben was projecting a lot of his own feelings onto how he perceived people treated him.
Okay.
So he would dramatize it. He would always take things to heart a little more escalated than they really were. But as far as Sue's concerned, you know, their dynamic otherwise is pretty spot on from what we know of it. And Ben is almost an older brother to Sue in a lot of ways. And he's a true confidant that helps balance her dynamic with Reed and makes them the family that they are. And then we have Sue Storm on the live action side, first portrayed by Rebecca Staub in the unreleased film, then Jessica Alba, then Kate Mara in Van Forsyk, and most recently Vanessa Kirby in Fantastic Four, First Steps. And so, yeah, once again, I think brotherly quality is really what embodies Ben in First Steps. Because he's not as temper tantrum me as the rest of the versions.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's a bit softer.
Yes.
I agree.
But he gets spicy, that's for sure. And in Fantastic Four, in the live action films, that quality, that brotherly quality shines a lot, especially with Sue.
Yeah, with Sue.
Which is very nice, and it's very lighthearted and soft. And especially true with Franklin. Mm. Like, that man is carrying that baby every freaking scene that they're in together. Like, he's on his lap.
Yeah.
He's carrying him. He's feeding him. He's doing all the things. It's great. Even more than Johnny, I think.
Oh, for sure.
He's lazy. Then we have Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic himself. And so it's funny because Reed actually kind of, he breaks the fourth wall in one of these issues. And I wonder, I mean, I believe in Marvel Comics, She-Hulk was the first one to break fourth wall. So I wonder how far off this issue of Fantastic Four is because it's...
She really?
I believe so.
She-Hulk?
She-Hulk did it.
It is.
I think she did.
I was
did,
like, oh,
yeah.
Deadpool. And I was like, oh, no, wait, he wasn't.
No, She-Hulk
yeah,
came
he
first.
Yeah, he wasn't Marvel yet.
But I think it's actually Mr. Fantastic because it happens in Fantastic Four number 11, which was 1963. And so I'm like, there's no way that... Yeah, because She-Hulk came in the 80s. But it is a special kind of issue because it was noted to be like the writer's room was like their response to everybody's questions.
Yeah.
So you could write into the comic book and be like, why does this happen? And they would answer. And so that issue where they break the fourth, they straight up look at you through the panel
and
they're like, and Sue and Reed started the question of like, oh, don't you remember the first time that, you know, we met? And Sue was like, Reed, darling, I think the readers would really love to hear the story as well. She literally says readers. And then he dead ass turns to the front of the panel
that's
and he goes,
funny.
Oh, that's right. Our audience might want to listen to all this. And it's like, what?
That's really funny.
Yeah. Fourth wall, 1960s. And so I think they're first technically, but... They recap once again Ben's origin through their college days. And so here's a panel from it. Oh yeah, here's the top of it. The top bubble actually says it. And he's like, you're right, Sue. A lot of readers have asked for more info about our past. Well, I remember the time Ben and I first met as roommates at State U. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the earliest documented fourth wall breaking I've ever seen. And so as you can see, they're in college. Ben is unpacking his stuff and they're introducing themselves. And he's like, I'm Ben Grimm Richards. Maybe you heard of me. And what I love about the text for Ben, all the dialogue, it's spelled exactly the way he says it. So it says, maybe. Maybe, not maybe.
Maybe you heard of me.
And then Reed is like, sure, Grimm, who hasn't heard of State U's hot football hotshot? And so it's very plain and simple. And here's another panel where Ben had a football scholarship, as I mentioned before, and immediately hothead. But Reed is so chill. Again, he's like on his third doctorate.
Of course.
And he's just like, I know, right? And he's just wanting to have a friend. And Ben is just giving him tough nuggets all the way through. But yeah, it's simple as apple pie. They were just college roommates. And then they got along swimmingly well, despite Ben's hard exterior. Which calls for why he mutated the way he did. Because like we've said before in previous episodes, it's like they all seem to manifest things already present within their psyche. So Sue always felt that people didn't see her and they looked through her. And so she became an invisible girl. And then Johnny was a hotshot. He thought he was hot shit. And then he turned into a human torch. And so Ben always had this wall up and this hard exterior. And then he became a rock. Yeah. And then for Reed, he stretches himself thin.
Too thin.
Right? What I love about all those is that they're kind of subdued. They're subtle. You don't really put the association together unless you really think about it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, makes sense.
Yeah.
And so what surprised me about Reed, out of college, the two both enlisted in services. And so, as we mentioned, Ben joined the Air Force while Reed became an underground member of the OSS, which is the Office of Strategic Services, a U.S. World War II intelligence agency that was the predecessor to the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA. So Reed joined this agency before all of the Fantastic Four stuff happened.
Yeah.
So they were kind of running these parallel courses with each other. Like, okay, we graduated college, we're chill. I'm going to join the Air Force. I'm going to be a spy. And then they come together eventually. So I said, that's really interesting. And he was like on the front lines. Reed was on the front lines, like manipulating the enemies and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap.
That's crazy.
With three doctorates, apparently. And that brings us to Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, in the live action. First portrayed by Alex Hyde White in the unreleased 1994 film. Then Ioan Gruffudd in the Fox films. Miles Teller in Fantastic. And Pedro Pascal in First Steps. And again, consistent. It's so consistent. They go against one another's grain, but for the greater good, they're very brotherly-like. And that dynamic is so true to the comics. Mm-hmm. It's almost hard to compare. Like, it's almost like every single relationship, live action to comic version, they're all at the same level of spot on accuracy.
Yeah.
But definitely Reed and Johnny I think are definitely right up there. But yeah, any favorite moments with these two in the
most recent one?
Any, either.
Ooh. At the top of the head, probably the most recent one where it's like him and Reed looking out the window. Mm. I forget the context of the conversation, mm-hmm. but it was kind of just like, are you sure about this? Mm. Like, do we have to do this? Mm. And he's like, yeah, we got to. Mm. And I I love their dynamic.
Mm. I think that's what makes Eben's voice version particularly.
Yeah.
Impactful.
I agree.
Is that moments exactly like that. And I forgot what he said too, but I think Reed was it like Reed being like, we don't have to do this.
Like, we don't have to use Franklin. I think that's what they were talking about. Like, there's only one way to kind of stop Galactus, and it's to use Franklin.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to.
Yeah.
But, you got to.
Yeah. I know. I wish I remembered what he said. But yeah, it's moments like those that I think are really, they're really impactful. And you don't even see, I mean, I'm so used to the visual of Ben Grimm, but I imagine that people watching that and that's their first exposure to that character mm-hmm. are still feeling like they're looking past all that because you feel the emotion in his voice. And so, I really love, First Steps was a kind of a knockout of the park for me. I really loved it. And I can't wait to watch it again, even though I saw it twice in theaters. I love those moments, especially with Reed. And I can't wait to see how they advance because I just feel like they hit so many marks already. And they're only one movie deep. And it's like, what are they going to be like by the next round?
I know.
You know? It's incredible. And you think about it, even with like between Iron Man 2 and Avengers and how Natasha like just jumps between in an organic way, in a good way.
Yeah.
Where you just kind of see the growth and the glow ups. And I'm just like, God, they're already so good. How do they glow up from there? Oh, gosh. So this portion's a bit longer. Well, not longer, but it is as interesting as the previous. And so that is love interests because your boy here. Oh, my goodness. So many ladies, but we're only going to talk about, we're talking about a few of them actually.
Only seven.
I know. I realized in retrospect, I was like, I left a couple of Johnnies really like, not crucial, but like definitely a couple that I could have touched on in Johnny, but mm-hmm. these ones are all like necessary for Ben. The first one is Alan Chambers. Mm-hmm. And so Alan was Ben's college sweetheart. Who was so serious, Ben even proposed to her, but she turned him down in pursuit of an acting career. Mm. She was like, I can't marry you, Ben. I got to go to Hollywood. She like literally says that. And he was like, but Alan, I love you. And she's like, I got to go.
I need to follow my dreams.
She literally says that. And she succeeds. She actually goes off to be a star. And as time passes, Alan found herself at Ben's doorstep once again after mm-hmm. what seemed like 20 years. And the craziest part is that she is now handicapped and disfigured by a stroke.
Oh my gosh.
And so in the panels, the right side of her face and the right side of her body is literally drooping. And she's got a cane. And he's like, oh, I haven't seen you in forever. How you doing? And she's just like, I need some help. And she asks him how to cope with being looked at differently. Mm. Because she knew that of all people who would understand, it would be Ben. And it is interesting. She didn't leave him solely because of the dream. She also did mention, like, I don't want to go off and distance from you if I'm becoming an actor.
Yeah.
I don't want us to draw apart, and I don't want you to get tired of me. I don't want to get tired of you. So this is for the best. And so that's really why she did it. She did do it to pursue her dream, but she didn't want to break up with him in a bad, in a worse way. So it is interesting that she comes back to see him and he welcomes her with open arms and he consoles her, which is like really sweet.
Yeah.
And so Alan herself does not have a MCU counterpart. And then that brings us to Linda McGill. And so I believe she's a doctor who dated Ben before the fated flight and worked at an aircraft company with him during his test pilot days. And so when he returned from the flight as the Thing, Linda did not take it very well. And she quite literally comes back and she's like, Ben, honey, I heard you're back from the flight and something happened. There's an accident. Of course, she turns on the light and she's met with this orange rock man and she's screaming, yelling away. And he tries to like explain to her.
Yeah.
And she makes him so angry. He's like, just get out of here before I kill you.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He literally is like, I'm going to kill you if you don't leave. And she runs off screaming. And so she eventually returns and she decided, oh, I think just give me time.
Yeah.
And I can figure this out. It'll be all right. We can have a relationship again. Mm-hmm. And he's like, get out of here. I don't want you anymore. And so it's funny because at first he's angry because he's reactive, but then he had time to think about it. And he's like, you know what? I deserve better. And so he rebuffs her attempt to rekindle the relationship.
Mm.
And although she has no MCU counterpart, I would say the basis of the before and after is closest to someone we did see in the live action films, the Fox films. And that is a character named Debbie McIlvaine. And so she was portrayed by Laurie Holden in the 2005 film. And she's the blonde lady that Ben was dating and he comes back home and she calls her on the phone.
Yeah.
He calls her with the payphone with a little trench coat. And
Yeah.
And so in live action, Debbie was Ben's ex-fiancée who had quite a bit of trouble accepting his new life as a Thing. Ladies, out. That entire scene made me want to face plant because I was like, baby girl, you come out on the street in the middle of the night, see your fiance in a like in your like lingerie. Mm-hmm. She's in her lingerie and then she freaks out and then she's like falls on the ground and she's like screaming and it's very dramatic. But anyway, she had a bit of a fiasco with the reveal. And then later returns to drop off the ring and after that battle they had on the bridge.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, girl, what do you,
girl,
he deserves better.
You're discriminatory.
Right. And so Debbie, however, has no comic book counterpart. So I feel like she was an amalgamated character of sorts that they just kind of pulled together a few of his comic love interests and put him into Debbie. And then that brings us to one of the two primary love interests for Ben. One being Sharon Ventura. What a name. That's a name. Sharon Ventura.
We have.
Sharon Ventura.
Is that like a detective?
Yeah.
Detective Sharon Ventura.
Yeah.
On the scene.
It sounds like Carmen Sandiego. Right? It's just a different county.
That's a good one.
Sharon Ventura.
Reporting live.
Exactly. And so Sharon Ventura. Good. And so this was Ben's longest standing relationship besides Alicia, who we're going to talk about last. Mm-hmm. And so Sharon was at one point Ms. Marvel in comic book continuity. Huh. So Ms. Marvel is the original title of what we now know as Captain Marvel.
Got it.
And so Ben's attraction to Sharon coincided with another romantic interest he had named Tariana. That's another story. We're not going to get into it. But basically, he was like, you remember me of somebody I liked. And he falls in love with her.
Of course.
But she does not return the affections because she's not into the orange rock.
Mm-hmm.
But she does eventually, later, much later. And so these two go off. They have a awesome relationship. She even joins the Fantastic Four for a bit. They're fighting side by side on the team, and they're also going off and doing these side quests and side missions. And during one of their adventures, they're like in Wakanda or something and having this battle. And so they take the spaceship and they're out of the atmosphere for some reason. As they're descending back into Earth's atmosphere, they're hit with cosmic rays again. It happened twice.
Twice?
He got it twice.
That's crazy.
I know. What are the odds? And so the two were bombarded, and then Ben was further mutated as the thing. So
he got bigger?
Kind of, actually.
Oh my gosh.
So speaking of like the beard, imagine the beard, but everywhere. So he got it up top, but not like a mohawk. It's just his fragments started to get sharp. And so he mutated So he turned into like more of like a mineral or gem shard.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy. But same color, same exterior, but he just got sharp. It was really strange. But that wasn't the strangest thing. Sharon then absorbed some of that as well. And she became a she thing.
Interesting.
Yes. And so what is particularly of interest as far as that is concerned is that if you're not paying attention and you're looking at the comic, if you just saw the cover of one of these comics and you saw She Thing, you would think it was Ben. That's how close they looked. Yeah. But Ben, of course, was the crazy sharded, like,
yeah,
version of himself. So she looked like him and she had like a unitard on.
Whoa.
Yeah. Trippy. And so despite their bonding process and romantic relationship, the two ended up distancing after Sharon accepted an offer by who else? Victor Von Doom.
Wow.
To return to her natural form, which she took. She took it. Mm. And Ben was like, ah, nerds to ya, toots.
Toots.
I'm making this up, but yeah, she took the deal. She became her usual form, and Ben was like, nope, I'm good. And so she has no MCU counterpart, but I think beyond Alicia, she's one we could possibly see, especially if they want to dabble in a she thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just could be very crazy, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, she could be very useful in battle. And then that leaves us with Alicia Masters herself. So this is so interesting because I don't remember reading this, but I know I'm familiar with it. But the two met under dire circumstances. And so Alicia is actually the stepdaughter of an infamous villain of the Fantastic Four called the Puppet Master. And so the Puppet Master found and used this radioactive clay to shape people he would then puppet and have do his bidding. And so he's going about, like, he made a puppet of this military man or something. Oh, this man that went onto the bridge and he was going to have him jump off because he was trying to lure the Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. And so once he did that, he then made a puppet of Ben. And so by controlling the puppet because of the radioactivity, he could possess the person and make them do whatever he wanted. It's like a voodoo doll of sorts. And so Puppet Master went as far as to even make Alicia impersonate Sue in a wig in this plot to overtake the team. And so at one point in the issue, his first appearance, he's like, oh, you know, Alicia, dear, if I look at you quickly, you look like Susan Storm. And so he slaps a blonde wig onto her.
It's crazy.
And Alicia's blind.
Yeah.
If you forgot, Alicia's blind. So she doesn't know what's happening. She does not know. So he slaps a blonde wig on her. He cuts it to look like Sue's. Takes Sue, because at the time, he then takes a costume of Sue's to put on Alicia, puts her on Ben's arm that he's puppeteering, and sends them into the Baxter building.
Oh, gosh.
It's so crazy. And so this is all part of his plot to enslave the team and make them do whatever he wants. But despite their mutual affections, Ben harbored a constant fear that Alicia liked him more as the thing. Mm. And this is really interesting because, again, she is blind. And so at one point, he reverted back to his human form very quickly. And this is a panel. This is Alicia as Sue. And so Whoa. Ben reverted back to his normal self. And when she first felt his face, she's like, where did the nice man go? And he's like, I'm right here. And she's like, no, it's not the same man. She liked the fact that she could feel
His face. His face. Specifically, yeah.
Yeah. And so when he reverted to his human form, she was almost like, I don't know who you are. But the moment he changed back, she's like, oh, he's back. Mm. And so Ben was like, whoa. I finally find somebody.
And then, who likes me for me.
Exactly. But she likes me as the rock me.
The rock.
Like, yeah. You know, like she likes the rock exterior for some reason. She likes him better as the thing. So it added to the self-doubt and the projecting that Ben was already doing. Mm. And how, again, he's mean to Sue because he felt he was being judged. He was mean to Johnny because he thinks, oh, the kid's making fun of me. Yeah. He's mean to people in general just because he thinks everybody's perceiving him as a monster. And he thought, oh, Alicia doesn't love me. She just loves this thing. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't true, of course. And so their relationship evolved over the years and they eventually got married in recent continuity. But their honeymoon got crashed by a possessed Hulk. So there's that.
Love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And it was Puppet Master again, which is annoying because it's like he's her stepdad. And she's on her honeymoon, and he's like, I'm going to ruin her day. And yeah, he just doesn't care. He's an evil, evil man. And so, yeah, that's that. They're in modern continuity. They're married. They're good to go. And lest we forget that Johnny Storm himself fell for a copycat of Alicia. And it was actually a Skrull who had taken on her image while Ben was away. And he married that Skrull. And then he was like, wait, you're Skrull. And Ben never let him forget it because then they got all the drama with Crystal and she was on the team. Yeah, it's a long story. But go back into our Johnny Storm episode to listen more about that. As for live action, Alicia Masters, portrayed once by the lovely Kerry Washington in both Fox Fantastic Four films. And so, thankfully, she did not play a huge plot point in the films. Like, not in a bad way. She wasn't, like, some damsel in distress.
Yeah, yeah.
She was just
a love interest.
Love interest. And she was Ben. Just a nice character that just, like, came into their lives and actually
yes.
had some substance. And I liked her even more in the second film, I think.
I think so. She had more, yeah, she had in, more. In the second film,
yeah,
for sure.
And I loved it. And especially with the fact that Ben had more at stake.
Yes.
Officially. Because he kind of, aside from the team, he kind of had this way about him that he was almost reckless in his actions and because of his temper.
Yeah.
But by the second film, because of Alicia, he's more reserved and thoughtful in what he's doing. But yeah, I absolutely love them. Made for really fun jokes with Johnny. what was that? He was like, how do you and Alicia...
You know.
You know.
You know.
Like, yeah. He's like, oh, thank God. I didn't want to wake up and read in the newspaper that she had been killed in Rock Slide. Like,
it's a good one.
It's such a good one. And so unfortunately, we do not have an MCU counterpart just yet. But I think it's possible. I just don't know. Man.
From what it looks like.
Yeah, I know. She's a big one.
Yeah.
And before we move on, an honorable mention to Rachel Rosman, portrayed by Natasha Lyonne in First Steps. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't much to her character other than the fact that you obviously get that there's a mutual kind of crush going on between the two of them. She's a teacher.
Like there's something there.
For sure.
Yes.
And I'm curious because I understand she had more of a part.
Probably.
But it was cut a bit.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably his story got trimmed down a bit. For reasons that we'll probably never know.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I hope they expand on that eventually. Interestingly enough, there's no comic book counterpart for Rachel. So she is an amalgamation again. So she's
one of those original
characters that they just kind of put down into the film. And we'll see if she gets anywhere beyond that. And that brings us to notable adversaries. So again, we're not going to go into the weeds with this one and mostly stick to the ones we've seen in live action. However, he has tangled very many times with Wolverine and the Hulk in his day. Wolverine, specifically, having even slashed Ben's face so badly that he lost part of his, like, he got so scarred, he had to wear a mask.
Oh my gosh.
And so that is near impossible, especially for Ben. And that's what I said up top, is that like he's got this sort of regeneration thing going on.
Yeah, but it's very
slow.
Yeah,
but against the adamantium?
Yeah.
So Logan, I don't think they've ever showed it. They've only shown the impact, and they were going at it because Ben stepped in to an argument that Sue and Logan were having. Mm. And so he inserted himself in the middle. Ben's temper flared off. Logan got crazy. And I think Ben, quite honestly, ended up with no face. Yeesh. And so he had to wear this helmet. It was like a...
hockey helmet?
It was like a... almost like a Rocketeer helmet.
Oh, okay.
But not so curvatured, but it's almost like a bullet, you know?
Yeah.
And so he wore the silver helmet for a while until his face finally regenerated back, which is so insane to think about.
I know, it sounds like it looks crazy.
I know, I'm like, ooh, are we actually going to see that? Because we might actually see that. And as for the Hulk, the strength and similar tempers is more or less why those two tangle and have tangled throughout history. So I wouldn't really note Bruce as a villain, because it is kind of like those people that are like, I want a Hulk movie where he just smashes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
that. It's people want to see two big guys like fighting, and that's what you get with Ben and Bruce. So not really villains and nemesises. But when it comes to the ones we've seen in live action, the first one is Harvey Elder, a.k.a. Mole Man. And so aside being a classic recurring villain in the Fantastic Four's Rogues Gallery, they don't have a deeply rooted connection. However, there was a moment in time in continuity that, of all people, Mole Man accepted Ben when most of society didn't. Mm. Simply because he was different. Because who would know better than Mole Man?
Yeah.
Because he looks like a mole. He literally looks like a mole.
A literal mole man.
Yeah. And so he accepted him into his realm.
Yeah.
And Ben actually, he took the bait for a bit. And there was no ulterior motive. He just felt welcomed and there was a community there. But yeah, other than that, they're in the comics, you know, he's one of those foes that comes in. He ruins the day. They save the day. And then that's it. They go back home and, you know, do it all again next week. And in the films, you know, what's unfortunate for all the live action ones is that, yeah, there's nothing really tethering them to Ben. Ben is just there by circumstance because of the Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. And they don't, none of these villains we're talking about have an actual, I need to get rid of that person.
Yes.
Which is interesting because that means he could use somebody eventually to come after him. And I think we might see that, especially with Doomsday and Secret Wars.
Yeah.
And so before we move on, obviously, Mole Man portrayed by Paul Walter Hauser in First Steps. And then that brings us to Silver Surfer. And so we've said this in the Johnny episode, you know, there's not really anything specific that connects Ben to Norrin Rad or Shalabal.
Yeah. Whoever the family is
proximity.
Fighting.
Yep. Yep. And same in live action. And the same for Galactus, for that matter. It's all Reed Richards and Sue Storm and Johnny Storm sometimes oriented. It's never Ben Grimm, which is very interesting. And so, again, I think people might get what they want with Hulk. Maybe if Universal lets Marvel play ball, you know,
yeah.
and let him fight him in the other films. But... that brings us to Galactus. And again, once again, they don't have anything that are distinctly connected between the two of them. But there was once a time where Ben's mutation was permanently cured. So he was Benjamin J. Grimm.
Uh-huh.
Back to old basics. Ben decided he wanted to attack Galactus during this battle.
Okay.
And Galactus was like, that is unacceptable. And he punished Ben for attacking him, and he reversed the cure, and he turned back into the thing.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's brutal.
That is brutal.
I know, and so this was a very, very, very interesting moment in time, because he was Ben Grimm, Ben then wore this exoskeleton suit that looked like the thing.
Oh my gosh.
So he was still kind of rough and tough.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So he would traipse around in this suit,
yeah.
cosplaying as himself.
I was going to say.
And then slowly but surely, this is after the battle, he starts to mutate back.
And he's back. Ah.
And he's like, nah! Yeah, and he's like, busted right out of the suit, staring at the shreds. And yeah, and that's what Galactus did. And so...
That's messed up.
What I didn't mention earlier is that Reed's goal is... 80%, I'm going to find a cure for you, friend. I'm going to find a cure.
Yeah.
Consistently.
Always.
And so, yeah. And so it happens all the time. It's almost like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Ben will revert back, reads like, amazing. And then he reverts back into the thing and reads like, I got it. I got it. Don't worry, friend. I'm going to work on a cure for you. And it just keeps on going. And that was, I think, the root of the original films, the Fox films. They really honed in on, I'm going to make a cure for you. I'm going to make a cure for you. Which, yeah, obviously comes from the comics. And so, yeah, if Ben's going to have beef with Galactus, that's definitely one of them. But again, Galactus didn't choose Ben because he's Ben Grimm. He's just like, well, you're here and you're attacking me, so I'm going to stop you. And then, of course, Galactus portrayed by Ralph Ennison in First Steps. And yeah, same thing. No direct connection to Ben specifically. But there is one last baddie we're going to talk about. And his name is Victor Von Doom. Dr. Doom, if you're nasty. And Doom is undoubtedly the Fantastic Four's greatest foe, despite anyone and anything else, recurring in every incarnation imaginable, despite his capability to help them. And so as for he and Ben's specific dynamic, Ben has never, ever trusted Doom. Never. Despite the rest of the Fantastic Four.
Smart man.
Allowing bygones to be bygones over the years.
Yeah.
And depending on the circumstance. But Ben, he's always the one that's like, nope.
No.
I don't buy
it. Get out of here, Victor.
Yeah, pretty much. He's probably just, God, what would he say? He would say something so colorful. Just like,
Victor, come on.
get your sorry carcass out of my vision before I plow you.
I don't want to hear you. Get out of here, Doom.
Yeah, something wild. But yeah, he would never, and he can smell the collusion. Yeah. That's one of my favorite lines.
He sees right through it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines from Twilight Zone, a Twilight Zone episode. And the man just like, I can smell the collusion. And I was like, it's such a way to be like, yeah, that's sus. You know, it's pretty much the same thing.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to say that. I can smell the collusion.
I say it all the time at work.
Like, what are you talking about?
You're like,
the smell doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel
the
right.
Collusion
it don't smell right.
I'm feeling.
Exactly. And so, yeah, that is his beef with Dr. Doom. And obviously, Dr. Doom is always going to be the Fantastic Four's biggest enemy.
Can't wait.
For many, many reasons. Yeah, and I need to see this already in live action. But, fun fact, technically, Ben met Victor before he met Reed. Crossing paths with him while looking for his shared dorm room. Mm-hmm. So, imagine, if you will, Ben's freshly on State University campus, and he's like, oh, I gotta find my dorm. And he's going to the dorm, and he's like, oh, looking around. And then this guy, well-dressed genius, bursts out of this dorm.
Yeah.
And they almost hit one another. And Ben is like, oh. And he's like, hey, I'm looking for a man named Reed Richards. And he's like, well, you've found him. He's in there. And that's it. That's the interaction. And Victor is vacating the dorm as Ben goes in. So we'll talk about that more, obviously, once we get to the Reed Richards story. But yeah, it is interesting. So from the moment that happened.
That is crazy.
Before they became the Fantastic Four, they were barely in college and he was already like, nah, don't like him. Nope. Then that brings us to, of course, Dr. Doom in live action, portrayed by the late Julian McMahon in the original Fox films, then Toby Kebbell in Full Stick, and most recently, Robert Downey Jr. in
Fantastic
Four.
That's crazy to say.
That's so crazy. I don't even know. But yeah, again, we don't know yet. But for Julian McMahon's case, not Ben at all. He barely even looked Ben's way, I think, half the time.
Yeah, it was mostly just kind of, it's always like, you know, Doom versus Richards.
Yeah.
Wanting Sue.
I feel like in the second film, he might have had a little more against him.
He was in the second film.
Yeah, he was a little bit because he had gotten souped up with the board and stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't think even, like in the first one, like they're all there.
Yeah.
But he's so focused on Sue, who was
wanting Sue.
Yeah.
Getting rid of Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's, again, he's kind of just floating in the ether. He's in the background. He's a co-star. But I think we'll see a bit more when it comes to Robert Downey Jr.'s version of the character.
I'm so curious. And you know what's going to be like the crazy part? Whenever that teaser trailer comes out. Bro. In the teaser trailer, they're not even going to... You're just going to hear him.
Oh, I know.
It's probably it.
And people won't even realize, right?
Yeah.
It might be like the Professor X all over again. Like when Professor X like dropped into Multiverse of Madness, I was like, is that Professor X? But then you see the subtitles and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. So that, that teaser trailer is going to have the least amount of information.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just like, I remember like when the first teaser for Endgame came out, it was like nothing.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely nothing.
And it's like
which is like great. It's a teaser trailer. Yeah, I get it. But it's like, you shouldn't be expecting much.
And it always has that like really good teaser trailers in general always have that like haunting like single piano key.
Pretty much.
Ding!
Yeah.
And it's just silence.
It's just, yeah.
And then random vocalizations.
Yeah.
I could totally see that happening for Doomsday.
They're going to give us absolutely nothing.
Speaking of, I was going to send them to you until I realized that they were 100% fan made. But did you see those posters, the teaser posters that were floating around?
I think so.
They were character posters.
Probably came across my timeline. Yeah.
And they're just like imbued in like green.
Sure, yeah.
And it was like Bucky and like Shuri, Thor, and a couple of other characters.
Yeah.
I was like, what the heck is this? Then I realized, I'm like, okay, first of all, it's AI slop.
Sure.
And then second, it was fan art.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious. I'm like, where did you even think to come up with that?
Yeah.
And then are they gonna do that? Are they gonna do the same thing again where they drop character posters and tease the hell out of it?
It's gonna get teased for...
Yeah.
I feel like it might get like a, because usually you do a month and a half promotion, right? Or a month promotion.
Yeah.
I feel it's going to get a little bit longer.
Oh, I think it's going to get 2 months.
Yeah.
I think it's going to get 2 months. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put past them to be like what they did with the Odyssey and just straight up 1 year.
Yeah.
Drop something.
Yeah.
And it's like,
end of next year, right?
Mm-hmm. December 2026. Yeah. So if we get one.
Honestly, I think that was before New Year's Day.
That'd
like maybe
sick.
They drop something. I feel like they've done that before. I don't know for what, but I feel like the New Year's
and that'd
the,
be
the
wild.
Next day, the next on January 1st at like 6 or 8 a.m. whatever.
Jeez.
Like there's just something. It's like, "Oh shoot, a trailer."
Mm-hmm. That'd be so crazy.
I mean,
but it was so appropriate at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm really dying to see not only just Victor Von Doom, but what RDJ does with him and the backstory that they're going to give that version.
Yeah.
Because I'm still set on the fact that it's not the prime one, but happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
Just want to see it.
Yeah.
So in other versions and other media, just want to quickly talk about, just because I'm back on my Rivals crap. Ben is very much one of the primary, what do you call them? Vanguards in Marvel Rivals now. And he is voiced by actor Andrew Morgado, who also provided the voice of Cliffjumper in 2018's Bumblebee, as well as various characters in Mortal Kombat and Call of Duty. And so I think Ben's really fun. I cannot play him for beans. I'm not good at playing him at all.
I can't play all the brutes.
Yeah, I can't. I can't do it. I've tried.
Just
like, and I'm
I
like,
I feel so heavy right now. Yeah. I can't do this.
And you just got a button mash. But I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
It's tough. But he's obviously very fun. And he's really reminiscent of the great versions of Ben Grimm, especially the animated counterpart that was in the 90s animated series, where he was voiced by Chuck McCann. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to those versions. And then that brings us to Almost Was. And so I could not find anything. I had to kind of dig into Reddit or something. But apparently, actor David Krumholtz was in discussions with Matt Shakman for the role in First Steps, but there were no other major reports beyond Eben. So it's almost kind of like, he might have had it. He might have had it.
Was he the first one that was cast? I forget. There was they told a story about like if Eben.
I feel like he might have been.
Oh, it might have been Vanessa. That was probably.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Either of, yeah. And then that's how they got.
Who was last?
I don't know. I feel.
That's how they got Pedro, though, is through Vanessa.
I think that's what I read or heard or in an interview.
Yeah.
But
once they start to formulate and they're like, hey, Vanessa Kirby's on board. And they're like,
who do you, but my thing is, who do you grab first?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, do you grab Joseph and Eben first so that maybe you can convince Vanessa
that's
to do
crazy.
It?
That's crazy. Negotiations.
Or do you grab Vanessa first so that, oh, maybe Pedro?
Mm-hmm.
To grab Pedro?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know. Like, they're all great. In respective to their character.
Yeah.
So it's like.
For sure.
And then it's like the chemistry test. But also there's a chemistry test too. Mm-hmm. So who did you have read together?
Exactly.
Like, did you have Pedro and Vanessa read together?
Yeah.
Or was it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wild. Yeah. So couldn't find anything. So I feel like Eben might have been early on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. Mm-hmm. And so future of the character in the MCU, what do you think?
Wherever the family goes, you know, where obviously they're riding into Doomsday.
I think he's going to play a big part in Franklin's evolution too.
I think so too. Like maybe if Franklin ever gets teased down like a dark path, maybe it's him that is like, no, don't go there.
I could see them, if they wanted to, if that happens to Franklin and Ben is that person that's going to reel him back into consciousness, I could see them taking that moment to introduce more of Ben's origin story with Uncle Jake, and that Uncle Jake's like trying to keep him from being the bad dude.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, it's drawing the parallel and, you know, this is what's happening with him. Because he is the Uncle Ben now.
Yeah.
He is Franklin's Uncle Ben. So, yeah, it's very much it could be a parallel, especially if they expand on Franklin's powers. But
yeah.
But yeah, wherever the family goes, I'm sure he will follow.
Yes.
So as for suggested reading, this was a tough one, because I definitely wanted to read even more and I just didn't have time. But right off the bat, 1983's The Thing solo series from John Byrne, Ron Wilson, Bob Sharon and team. It's a great primer for anyone who wants to get to know Ben a little bit more, all the way to his Yancey Street gang roots, which, by the way... So back in the day, they were like very Jets versus Sharks, right? They're like gangsters, right? We're wearing like James Dean looking things.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Yancey Street gang is like a bunch of failed Halo investors and cryptocurrency guys.
Oh my gosh, of course it is.
And they're dressed like they're like from American Psycho, and they're just like in suits and blazers now.
It's, oh my gosh,
freaking ridiculous.
Of course
Ben hates them. Oh my god, it's so funny. 2002's Thing Freak Show from Jeff Johns, Scott Collins, David Self and team. Another great primer for the Ben origin, plus a quest for redemption that includes Skrulls, Kree and more, so it's a bit cosmic there. Then 1984's Secret Wars.
Ooh.
From Jim Shooter, Mike Zeck, and Bob Layton and team. And so, although Ben isn't generally considered a prime character of that series, he still goes through it. Like, he's got a bunch of story happening for him. And he's even able to revert back to his human form while he's on Battleworld. And so it's very interesting character growth. And it ties into a bunch of stuff thereafter. And last but not least, definitely the first 10 to 15 issues of the original first Fantastic Four title, like obvious reasons. It's really good to get to know the team and their dynamic and their early on stuff. And it's all in that vignette that's in the movie where they're just pow, 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 showing all these villains they're fighting. They're all from those issues, so it's really cool. We haven't talked about Red Ghost at all, and I think I'm going to change it for the next issue, next episode, because they're in the movie for, like, you know, John Malkovich.
Right? Yeah,
he's in it for a whole 5 seconds, but not even
his
gorillas are. But
yeah,
so we'll talk about them later on down the line. And all that said, that is the end of the show.
Wow. So that was The Thing.
Thanks for listening. Next episode. So we finally come to the end of our Fantastic Four family character studies. But I wanted to mention, to course correct ourselves, we're going to have a mini Marvel for our next episode before we jump back in and finish off the familia that is the Fantastic Four with Mr. Fantastic himself, Reed Richards. Mm-hmm. So join us in a couple of weeks. Mini Marvel video included.
Woo!
Quick chit chat about all the stuff. Hopefully there's stuff out.
Yeah. Honestly, and if there's not.
If there's not, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to figure it out. We're going to figure it out just in time for Thanksgiving, y'all. And finally, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute to Chris, Sherry, Jenny, Melanie, Laura, Andrew, Ed, Tyler, Ashley, Andrea, Joe, Liz, Nats, Ariel, Robin, and Katie. And follow us on social at STRKC and TRST. If you experienced ads during this episode, which I finally got, I was like, oh my God, we got ads.
There you go.
You can unlock an ad-free version of this podcast by supporting us on Patreon. And if you like what you hear, please review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
What time is it, Ben?
No, Johnny.
Say it!
I don't wanna!
Say it!
It's Clobber!